Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
So this week we have Mandisa Thomas, who has been here before many times. She's an absolute expert and we love having her here, hence why she's back again. And she's going to tell us about dating and other connections as a non-believer. So I'm sure you already know her, but just to give you a quick summary, Mandisa Thomas is the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers. She currently serves on the board of American Atheist and the American Humanist Association, and facilitates the Morrow GA chapter of Recovering from Religion. In 2019, Mandisa was named the Freedom from Religion Foundation's Free Thought Heroine, which is very impressive, and was the recipient of the Secular Student Alliance Backbone Award. So Mandisa, thank you so much for being here again. We love having you here. So yeah, the floor is yours.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be back. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Amaya. Thank you, Gail, Todd, and everyone on my fellow teammates on the Recovering from Religion team there. It is an honor to be back again. And thank you to everyone who was tuning in this evening. I see some familiar faces, and it's always a pleasure to engage with all of you as I have come to know you all through the years. And so we're going to talk about something a bit sort of fun but serious, and which is dating. And this is a subject that has been recurring over the years of my involvement in this community and in building the organization and in building the community, especially of Black atheists and Black non-believers in person. This often tends to be a very, very, it's a hot button and very sensitive topic. And it's worth having this discussion and over repeatedly, and also offering advice on dating and also other connections. And I say other connections because it's important to understand that how we engage each other can determine our ability to form any type of relationship. So it's something that we should continue to keep in mind. So without further ado, I'm going to share my screen here. So, more about me, founder and president of Black Nonbelievers. I was born and raised in New York City, for those of you who didn't already know. And I had a secular upbringing, so I didn't have to transition out of religion, though I was indoctrinated. I was indoctrinated into the Black nationalist and Black conscious mindset communities. And so that's important to note, because I think it does give a unique perspective, and it's actually worth hearing from those who don't necessarily transition out of religion per se, because we all have our journeys that are relatable to others in this community. Some go through one or both, multiple, but it does make a difference. And so just a reminder that I transitioned to full-time activism in 2018, running Black Nonbelievers full-time, is in addition to serving as a chapter leader for Recovering from Religion in the Morrow area, and serving on the boards for American Atheists and the American Humanist Association. And so my Patreon link is underneath my picture there. If you'd like to subscribe, shout out to everyone who is a supporter, including Gail. I usually try to write something about 2 to 3 times a month. I tend to post something that you wouldn't necessarily see me share either in a presentation or on my social media. So it's a good way to get some insight into and learn a bit more about me and what I, and my thoughts there. And it's also a good way to help me support my activism, because it is still volunteer and, support is needed. And so these are just a few things about me. Things have become My schedule has been very busy this summer, which has just been amazing. And part of that is due to Recovering from Religion and the weekly series here. I really do appreciate being invited back. And again, I appreciate that, you know, people like what I have to say. But a bit more about me that is a bit more, you know, relevant to this topic. So for those of you who didn't know, I am married with three children. Met my husband in 1996 when I was 19 years old. We got married in 2006. And what's significant about that is, so yeah, we were together. We developed our relationship. We had moved to the Atlanta area when our daughter was 3 weeks old. So by the time we got married, 10 years later, we had two children. We already had a house. You know, we had established a family. So we didn't do things in that quote unquote traditional way. And I'm going to share a tidbit with you about my life. We had sex on our second date. So yes. Ooh. And the reason why that's important to note is because in our upbringings, we're taught to think that, well, there's supposed to be this process in how we develop our relationships and such, and how there's supposed to be this, you know, sort of this fairy tale, this fairy tale process of how we get together, and you know, you're supposed to wait, and that didn't happen for us. that just didn't. And so it wasn't a regrettable experience. And now, as you see here, we're talking about over a 20-year relationship. So, and that leads me to say that, yeah, I'm very much a non-traditionalist. I pretty much always have been, and I am anti-conformity. You know, I do not encourage just going along with things simply because, and allowing yourself to be subjugated in any form or fashion. So I'm very much an anti, you know, system type of person, especially when it comes to relationships and cultivating them, because there's many ways to do that. And so I am speaking from not just a practitioner's perspective, someone who has been instrumental in building community and engaging a number of people, this is a part of the work that I love. The number of people that I engage, the number of people who come and ask me for advice, and also how I, you know, because when you engage and when you, you know, and with my background, having been in customer service and hospitality, you begin to, you know, you see different types of people, and you also see how, you know, the similarities and the differences. So this is real life, you know, that this is real life advice. This is going to be a real life perspective here that's come from lived experiences. So with that, you know, it's important to get into the background once again of what religion and other forms of indoctrination impact for us, because it's worth repeating, because we must understand that in order to get to where we want to go, we have to understand where we've been and how it has affected us. So our, you know, religious views and other indoctrination, which may include being from either a patriarchal perspective and other societal perspectives, it shapes our worldviews. It also shapes our engagement with other people, how we raise our children, our physical, mental, and emotional health, and self-development. And these are things that when you are looking to establish connections with other people, and especially those that are of a romantic nature, these are things you have to consider about your perspective, especially if you are looking to date and establish more serious romantic relationships, because they are very, very important. Now, how our organizations can help, they help overcome feelings of isolation and loneliness. We provide community and connections, clinical/medical resources and referrals, re-education on worldviews, liberation from dogmatic perspectives, and this is very important, and also become a better you. Because you're going to hear me say this throughout this presentation and throughout this discussion. A lot of it has to do with you, becoming a better you. You have to be better. You have to become a better you in order to be better for someone else. So that is going to be a central focus of this discussion here this evening for the next 45 minutes, an hour or so. So there's a time now for self-evaluation. Now, some of you may have come out of religion. You may have been in a serious relationship before. When you left religion, that relationship may have deteriorated or may have ended. You may have had some challenges dating when you were a believer, but now that you are a non-believer, that's even more challenging, which is completely understandable. And if you've had traumatic experiences, whether they were in romantic partnerships or not, now is the time to be honest and do some self-evaluation. Because before you start to engage people seriously, it's often because now we don't have this, you know, we don't have this, you know, divine being hanging over our heads and our mentalities. So it's not going to be up to that entity to solve it. It's going to be up to who? Us. So now is the time for, you know, self-evaluation and be honest. Now, if you are someone who is looking to be in a relationship, you know, it's important to be honest with yourself and ask yourself, how well do you communicate overall? And this is one thing I've noticed in a community of atheists and non-believers. So many of us pride ourselves on our intellectual capabilities. Many of us are very articulate. You know, we tend to, you know, speak very well. We tend to convey our words in a way that is understandable to everyone else. But one thing I've said over and time again is that our community does need work on our social skills. And for many, whether you want to admit it or not, it's severely lacking in how you engage with other people. Because if you find that you're talking at folks and not talking to them, that is going to be one of your first barriers to establishing long-term relationships with other people. So you have to ask yourself and be honest about that. How well do you communicate overall? Because while it is true that you are not always responsible for how people receive your words, You are responsible for how you put it out there. And in my book, tact is everything. It doesn't necessarily mean you're being too accommodating or being overly nice, but tact, especially if you're looking to develop your personal relationships, is very, very important. Secondly, you have to ask yourself, are you truly ready to date and form new relationships? And it's fine if you're not. Sometimes when you leave religion behind and you're still dealing, you're still unpacking, you know, those emotions, you're still unpacking a lot of the new information, you have to ask yourself, are you ready? Because you may not be. And so there are maybe a number of factors that come into play when it comes to your ability and your willingness to actually start dating again or connecting again. And also you have to ask yourself, what type of relationship are you looking for? Are you looking for a serious relationship? Are you looking for something just more casual or even just a sexual hookup? Sometimes it may be one of three, sometimes it may be two or three, or sometimes it may be all of the above. And that's totally fine too. It's okay to ask yourself, at what point in your life, what are you actually looking for? What type of relationship are you looking for? So these are things that is important to self-evaluate. And also, as you're leaving religion behind, how are you also, so here's you know, some important factors in dating and connecting. And here's where I think, I referenced Daryl Ray's book, Sex and God, How Religion Distorts Sexuality. So as we can see here, you know, for someone who is fundamentally religious will take a look at me and say, you had sex on your second date? You know, how dare you? You know, you're a slut, you know, you're going to hell, whatever. You know, these are things that some people may think. And unfortunately, the indoctrination and also views, especially about women and sexuality, which for religion is very, very demeaning towards us. Very, very demeaning. And so there are, and for both men and women, and for, you know, for whatever your gender identity is, it's important to reassess those, you know, those ideals that you were brought up with. But important factors in dating and connecting are your preferences. And it's important to evaluate what those preferences are and whether they are based, whether they were based on your, in what you would, you know, how you were indoctrinated, because there are some people who may have preferences towards a partner because it may be passed down through something they may have seen from their parents or other relatives. Some may be influenced by other factors, but it's important to reassess what your preferences are. Secondly, it's your flexibility. Are you willing to, especially now that you are less religious and you don't have that dogma over your head, how flexible are you with those preferences? Is it something more of a physical nature? Is it something more mental? You know, what is it about your preferences that may be steering, you know, your dating and connecting? Also, reciprocation. Now, this is a very, very important factor in relationships. Are you willing to, are you receiving as much as you are giving, and vice versa? Is the person or persons you're looking for reciprocating the way you may want them to? And also, you know, it's important to understand that there's going to be give and take. I notice this, I'm not saying this isn't new for any of us, whether you are establishing new relationships, whether you're in a current relationship, or even just having your friendships. Reciprocation is extremely important, and it's important, and it's good for us to reevaluate how much we may be giving or receiving, you know, giving of ourselves, and also what we may be getting from the other person or persons. Consistency, I cannot stress this enough. I had a cousin who made a comment last year on social media, and I never forgot it. She said, consistency is key. Don't introduce me to nothing you can't maintain. So now, as we know, there are dynamics in relationships that change, but being consistent, and the good kind of consistent, is always important when it comes to establishing connections and when you are dating, when you are looking for dates. You don't want to be a person who flakes out on others, and you don't want to start establishing relationships with people who you know may not be as consistent. So you know, and also, you know, what your tolerance levels for that may be. You know, there may be some things that may not necessarily bother you at the time, but maybe later they may become an issue. So it's important to start looking at those things now before you get into a relationship later and they get worse. And finally, boundaries. It's always important to set boundaries and also understand and respect the other person's boundaries, because they may have them as well. And one thing I didn't note on here, all of these things involve communication, talking with people, talking, listening, and listening to understand, and not necessarily to just to respond. But knowing all of these things here are important factors when it comes to dating and connecting, because you do need to know what your boundaries are and what the other person's boundaries are. But it's also important that they don't, it isn't just about you telling each other. It's also important for you to read the signs, you know, to read the room. You know, it's important to gauge and then also ask questions too. So dating in a highly religious environment. Now, if you're in the South, like most of us are, that can be a challenge. And so for many of us, the disclosure of the atheist / non-religious identity is going to come into question. You know, if you are connecting with someone who may still be religious, which, you know, if you're in the South, it's going to be quite common. You may need to ask yourself if you're going to disclose your non-religious identity to your potential partner. And this is where communication will be extremely important here, because now you're going to have to gauge if this, you know, if the person will be open enough to be accepting and understanding. But you also want to, you know, disclosure early on would be very important, because if you spring something like that on someone later on, that could cause issues, and you don't want that. So, you know, that's going to be on a case by case basis. Ideally, it shouldn't be an issue, but I can tell you that particularly within the Black community and Black atheist spaces, connecting and dating is a challenge, especially since there are still a high number of Black women in particular who still identify as religious, and that does become a deal breaker for a number of them. Or if the identity is disclosed, then there is a, you know, there's a tendency to want to try to bring folks back over to the other side. And if that is going to become contentious, then you may want to evaluate that moving forward. And so that is often, and many times in our groups, we often hear there are some of our members who may be in small towns. It's hard to find like-minded individuals, especially secular, who are completely non-religious. And so now you have to navigate that. You have to navigate that part of it. What are the things you may have in common outside of, you know, the religious or non-religious identity? And if it is something that you can work with in forming these relationships. So it's a lot to think about. And it's something that definitely needs to be taken into serious consideration. So, I'm married or already in a relationship. Now, Eric said that, you know, this may not particularly apply to him. But as I said before, as we are establishing connections, period, you know, there's something relevant in it for all of us. So I'm married or already in a relationship. Can I still date? Now that we've let go of these religious or dogmatic ideals, short answer is yes. You know, that is a possibility, that if you are married or in a committed relationship, that it is possible for you to still date. There are a number of people who are in polyamorous relationships, like Amaya said, you know, she's poly, which is, you know, the ability to love and form romantic connections with more than one person. I am an advocate for polyamory, for those who didn't know. because I think that it is, now I'm just saying here that there are some people who may disagree, but I really do think, and people think that polyamory is simply about sex, and it is not. Polyamory has a lot to do with emotions. You know, it is about community, what you share with your partners. And that isn't always physical. And so it gets this, it gets this tainted reputation for it just being people just screwing whoever they want. And that isn't true. So many of us, if you have friends outside of your marriage, then you might already sort of be polyamorous already, but just not to that extent. So just looking at it from that perspective of, you know, you have close friends either with the same or opposite gender that you may share things with that isn't necessarily your spouse or your partner. And that's totally fine. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But also too, people need to realize that the dating process isn't just for people looking for new relationships. When you are in a long-term relationship, when you establish that you either have a boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, spouse, you have to continuously date those individuals because as the dynamics of relationships change, especially when you have children, that they do change. And it's important for us to realize that going into relationships and thinking that there's nothing that is going to change is unrealistic. So therefore, you have to constantly cultivate those relationships that you are in. So the dating process really never stops. Whether you are still looking for a new partner or whether you are already in a partnership, there are things that you can do. And it may seem to be complicated because some people really think, oh, I'm in this marriage or I'm in this relationship, we're set, we don't have to do anything else. And that is the quickest way for a relationship to fail is for you to take the other, it's to take your partners for granted. So keeping yourself and keeping your, for you and your partners to stay in the mindset that yes, you can, it is okay for you to date. It doesn't always have to be, especially if you have children, it doesn't always have to be about the kids. They don't have to be included in everything. It is okay to set aside that time for yourself and your partners, and even just for you. Take that time out for you in those relationships so that you can regroup, you know, rejuvenate and continue to hold those relationships, continue to develop those relationships as they go along. So here are some other points to ponder here. So relationships won't work unless you do. So hopefully, again, the theme, hopefully what you're taking away from this discussion here is that relationships take work. And for some people, it may be challenging, or what may seem simple to some may be challenging for others, especially for those who have acknowledged that their social skills do need some work. And that's totally fine to acknowledge that. But the relationships don't work unless you do. Also, how you deal with others regularly can determine your success or failure in your relationships. The one thing I've always said is that if you're a jerk when you're single, you'll probably be a jerk in a relationship. Especially if you have not taken the time to either self-assess or even get clinical help that you need in order to engage with other people. So how you deal with others regularly really says a lot about how you'll be in a relationship. There are some people who think that being in a marriage or being married will just change everything about, you know, everything about them, and it doesn't. Ultimately, these things are already in you. You've already developed them, or you're still working on them. And it's important to understand how those play out every day. So pretty much what you're doing on a regular basis with other people are also the same principles that you should be applying in your engagement romantically with other partners. And it's important to understand that they aren't all about you. If you are seeking relationships, expecting that you're just going to just fulfill all of your needs and that the partner or partners are just supposed to fulfill your needs, then that's also a setup for failure. Because again, it's about partnerships. You have to also think about this as team building. And as a team, nothing works solely by yourself. There is work that has to be put in it from everyone involved. And so while it is important for you to focus on yourself and to know what it is that you want out of a relationship, because that is very important, managing your own expectations and also meeting your own expectations. No one else can meet your expectations more than you. But realizing that it isn't just about you, understanding that your partner or partners have expectations as well, and you have to be honest enough with yourself to really decide whether you can meet them. And the more you actually are considerate of other people, then the more likely they are to be considerate of you. So, you know, again, that's also where that reciprocation comes in. And so while there are no fairy tales, how many of us grew up with the Cinderella stories, the Snow White stories, all of the things that, that show to have fairy tale endings, the happily ever afters, most of the times we live in a world of reality. And the reality is that things can be tough and that there are relationships that may not work out. I am a product of a single parent household. My parents split when my older brother and I were very, very young. And did that impact me and how I decided that I was going to navigate my relationships? Absolutely it did. Because I was able to learn from what my parents did or didn't do, and as well as the people around me, and reading some books and also doing some self-assessing about what it was that I wanted to get out of my relationship and also what I wanted to provide for my relationship. So while there may not be any fairy tales, there can be happy endings. Remember that leaving religion and overcoming the indoctrination is only one part. And I think one of the key issues about religion is that for many who were raised fundamental, you were conditioned to think that that was it, that that was your only solution. And once you leave, there is nothing else. And that is very, very painful to realize. That is painful to overcome. Because you do feel that isolation, you feel that loneliness, and you feel like no one else understands what you're going through. And that certainly isn't the case. But what it does take for people to do, again, it takes for you to really, really do that work on yourself. Because even if you didn't get yourself into it, there's certainly work you can do with the help of others and with the help of a community, with the help of resources, especially for your mental health. There is that work you can do, but you don't have to do it alone. And once you are ready to start, and if you are engaging on dating websites and in groups on social media, it is important, once again, to be honest with yourself about the pain that you may be experiencing and also how you are overcoming it. So there can be happy endings for all of us. And that doesn't even mean it has to end. Of course, all good things must, you know, they don't always have to come to an end. And of course, we know that our lives are finite, but we can while we are here on this earth, and while we are building and becoming a part of communities, we can continue to establish the relationships and find the relationships that we want. Because again, being a better us means that we're doing better, not just for others that are in our immediate space, but also in the future. So these are some serious things to consider here when it comes to those relationships. Now, you know, there are a number of dating sites that in our forums that people are part of. I know one of them is Plenty of Fish. I know I kind of fast forwarded to the questions here, but I'll get to that in a moment because I'm still summarizing, doing my summation here. But you know, there are a number of dating sites. I'm not necessarily on them, but I know there are some others who are. If people have links to them that you would like to share with those who may not be familiar, please do that. And again, it's important to, you know, perhaps, you know, be honest about what you're looking for and be prepared. Here's another thing. Be prepared that somebody will say no. You know, rejection isn't necessarily a bad thing. It can hurt, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing to, you know, for someone to say no, because that is a part of the boundaries as well. You know, it's important for us to, again, reassess what we have been conditioned to think, why we think these things. When we come out of religion, and especially if you're coming out of relationships when you were religious, because when you leave religion behind, there is this liberation and freedom that you feel, which is amazing. That is absolutely amazing, especially when you come into the fact that, especially when you realize that there is no hell that you're going to. And all of the things that you may have been thinking that you might go to hell for doing, especially if you have sex before marriage, you know, those are things that you realize that you are not going to be, you know, that you aren't going to be punished for anymore, but there's still accountability. There is still accountability in how we take care of ourselves and also how we take care of and how we engage other people. So keeping that in mind, you know, as we continue to reevaluate our sense of morals and ethics and how we treat each other, because that's always going to be at the core, how you treat people. And that it will definitely determine your success in finding new relationships and whether you are, you know, whether you've left religion behind and you're still with a partner from when you were religious. It's okay to still develop that relationship as well. Again, it is a constant process, and you just may never know what you may get out of, you never know what may come from it. But for those who are looking, especially for new relationships, it's important that even if you are not at your optimal, you know, place in your life, because that's also another thing that people consider, well, I need to be at this space in order to do a certain thing. And that may not be necessarily true, because you can enter into a relationship and still work towards those goals. So, and again, that goes back towards the flexibility piece as well. Whether or not you are so hardline that you may be missing out on certain opportunities. And again, It varies from person to person. It varies from relationship to relationship, but these are things that we must take into consideration. And so part of me at times tends to scold my members, because there are some folks who are looking to date, but they are still holding on to the baggage that they had from their religious beliefs. And it's important, again, this is where that reassessment and that evaluation is coming, you know, maybe coming, it's a very, very important, because you have to look at this through new eyes. You really do. You have to look at this through a fresh set of eyes and realize that although our parents and our loved ones may have indoctrinated us because You know, they wanted us to have these sets of values that they thought were helpful, that there are some challenges with them. And they may be hard to break. They're not going to be easy, and they may be very painful. And there is a process for that, but you can overcome it and also start looking at that bright side so that you can have that happy ending, even though, again, once again, there's no fairy tale ending to it, but you can make it as optimal as you can for yourself, your partner, and other people that may be involved. So that will conclude the official portion of this, this talk. You know, I hope it was very helpful. I know there were some links that may have been shared in the chat. However you are proceeding with your dating process, I hope you keep an open mind. Don't be afraid to take risks, even though it can be scary. And also, don't be afraid to do away with, again, those traditional ways of thinking. So for the women who may feel as if, you know, a man or someone else should just approach them, you may want to reconsider that. If there is someone that you are interested in, it may not hurt for you to take the first step. So that is about also being becoming more empowered and becoming more self-aware and more self-confident, because confidence is key here as well. There are a lot of things that we have to work on, especially our insecurities, and those manifest themselves in a number of ways. But again, it's important for us to be honest about what those are, so that we are continuing to engage and developing those relationships and healthy ones, so that we're developing healthy and happy relationships, and if there are children involved, that you are passing those down to them as well.
Awesome. Fantastic. I had said at the beginning that this may not apply to me, but I was 100% wrong. And I've got several things out of here that, that I can even apply to my own marriage, like the self-examination. And it's perfect. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was fantastic, Mandisa. Thank you so much. I really love that you mentioned the topic of boundaries, which Shameless promotion, we have another video on boundaries, another FRX video. So if you would like to visit that, go to our YouTube channel. But yeah, I really liked also how you included polyamory. As always, inclusive. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, folks, we have got to the Q&A session. Maya, would you like to kick us off with some of the first few questions?
Sure. So the first question is about consistency. So someone asks, if you are not showing consistency, could it be better to take a break from dating or just make sure to communicate honestly and openly with your partner?
Yes. So communication, it is important to reassess the communication first, because there are times where there may be your partner may not necessarily be I'll give myself as an example. There are times where I think I'm communicating well and I'm really not. So if I find that I may have to, and I am not a fan of repeating myself, so that does frustrate me. But there are times where, and I do have a heightened sense of, because I have to gauge certain situations, there may be other people who, and my husband included, who doesn't necessarily do that. So sometimes I find myself repeating, repeating myself at times where I'm just like, oh, goodness. But yes, it is important for us to assess how we're communicating and how the information is being received. And it's important for us to understand that there may be life circumstances that may be driving how we're saying something at the time, especially to our partners. So it's important that we are remaining objective when we're communicating, that we aren't always speaking out of anger and frustration, because that will not be received well. However, if you know that you have been, if you've been doing all of those things, And if you're with a partner that, if you're dating and you're finding that, you know, the communication or the reciprocation isn't there, then it may be time for either, you know, that relationship to, you know, you may have to take that particular relationship into consideration and also reevaluate how that has affected you before you enter a new relationship. So, you know, it is important for, you know, for, you know, that, and that reassessment and that self-assessment is a challenge because it is always ongoing and you constantly, and you don't want to beat yourself up over it. You know, you don't want to constantly, you know, think that it is just your fault. But yeah, I think it's important for us to, it's important for people to, you know, reevaluate the, you know, the communication situation, whether it, we are communicating with them or whether they are communicating with you before, you know, you take that next step.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Sorry. Thank you. The next question is about my favorite topic, polyamory.
So, yes.
Someone asks, can polyamory be complicated? Is it jealousy inducing?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Yeah, sorry. Can polyamory be complicated? Is it jealousy inducing? So like more so than maybe monogamous relationships? Because I know a lot of people in the chat have been wondering if that jealousy could lead to violence and then toxic relationships.
Right. So here's the thing. Yes. And much of that comes from these, you know, these very religious ideals of what romantic love is. We've been taught to think that, you know, it's supposed to be between one partner only and that's it. And so if your partner has an attraction to someone else, that could cause insecurities. And also if those partners are not communicating that well, then yes, that it could possibly cause jealousy. But that's where, again, the communication should be, you know, in ideally, if you are entering in a polyamorous relationship, everyone is on the same page and everyone has communicated with each other and that there are bonds and friendships established amongst everybody. Are they going to be perfect? No. Will there be challenges? Absolutely. But the ability to assess and also resolve conflict. Conflict resolution is also a huge part of relationships. So it certainly could, especially if you've been raised to, you know, with this idea that, well, you know, your partner is only supposed to be for you. And especially if you treat your partner as a possession. That is also another societal ideal that I think needs to stop because people are not property. Your partners are not your property. They don't belong to you. They are still their own individuals. We're still our own people. And also because things do change in relationships and because we're human beings, you know, it's okay to feel an attraction to someone else, even if you're with a partner, whether it's monogamous or non-monogamous. So, but it's possible, but it's, and also if you're seeing like some early warning signs of people who may show those jealous tendencies, it may be important to weed them out. No matter how much you care for them, because ultimately, if those aren't resolved in the beginning, they can only get worse in the long run. So hopefully those, you know, they won't lead to violence if our conflict resolution skills are either up to par or they're constantly being worked on. So that's something that is very, very important.
Yeah, we definitely need to get rid of this romantic idea of love in which you find your soulmate and this person has to fulfill every single one of your needs and it's just perfect for you and everything is so effortless and wonderful. It's just so toxic and it can lead to so many situations, as you said. So yeah, thank you for the answer. That makes perfect sense. Okay, so the next question is more related with religion. So the person says, I wouldn't personally date anyone who considers themselves a Christian, but what about someone who says they are spiritual? What does that even mean?
So that, again, it's, you know, we get the whole spiritual but not religious. They may not be fundamentally religious. They may not be fundamentally Christian, Muslim, Jewish, or what have you, but they may be, you know, they may still believe in some form of divine entity. What that is, you know, is up to their, you know, their perception. But usually that means that they are a bit more open-minded than most of your Christians who may have been raised fundamental. So there's a lot of like sort of existentialism that, because I used to say I was spiritual but not religious, you know, but that didn't, to me, that didn't really mean much. But people have to come to that realization, you know, you can't, it's almost an exercise in futility if you're trying to push them towards your perspective. So it's important for you to continue to build and work with folks where they are, and also that they are doing the same with you. Now, I can understand many atheist reservations with dating Christians, because there is a hard expectation on that. And even though there are, you know, some Christians who say they want certain things, but then down the line they may do something else, that's kind of human nature though. but I would say that for spiritual but not religious, I couldn't necessarily, that depends on the individual. And, you know, that depends on their level of understanding, their level of flexibility, and how y'all can relate. You know, what things do you have in common outside of your religious perspectives? Can you build on that, you know, more than you disagree on the religious perspective? So again, that is very subjective.
Yeah. So again, it always comes back to communication.
Absolutely.
You're all aligned in the same, I don't know how to say it, but you know what I mean. That you're all aligned in the same beliefs and
Yes.
So Eric, do you want to take the next one?
Yeah, you bet. So coming out of religion, we talked a little bit about this last week about how like God has a plan for everyone and God has a plan for me. And that can sometimes include, people can think would include oh, there's a soulmate out there for me. There's just one person out there who is just for me. That's perfect. And all I got to do is find them. How does one deal with that coming out of the spiritual mindset?
So yeah, that can be very hard because, you know, we're conditioned, you know, we've been taught to think that there's just this one perfect person there out for you. And, you know, that it can be a hard pill to swallow when you realize that the person who you may have thought was your soulmate turns out not to be. And so it really does, when you're leaving religion, and, you know, I said this before, a reality check and a reassessment of what a soulmate is or what a soulmate can be, or even soulmates, because there may be more than one. I think compatible partners, if we're speaking in realistic terms, you're either perfect or great partner. And so this idea that, some people still may use the term soulmates, but I do think that, much of how we've been conditioned to think, definitely plays a part in this whole celestial idea of what that is supposed to be. And unfortunately it can set us up for a lot of unrealistic expectations and a lot of disappointment. So it is a matter of you can define what a good partner for you is. And I think, that goes to really figuring out what you want the type of person that you are, and also what you can, you know, how, what you can glean from other people. So we can, you know, we can certainly define that for ourselves. It doesn't have to be predefined for us. That I'll definitely say.
Okay, and the next question is, what strategies do you recommend for relatively new non-believers who are subjected to anti-atheist prejudice and bigotry while dating or in a relationship?
I know who asked that question. So the strategies that I recommend would be, for one, if you are dealing with someone who has strong anti-atheist or secular sentiments, it might be good to ask why. Now this may be sort of like the street epistemology approach. You know, try to ask them, you know, why they feel this way. And maybe ask, you know, if you found that you were dating someone who was non-religious, what would you do? And so, because there are many believers who don't necessarily engage with atheists or non-believers, and who have these very loaded opinions of us, but they've actually don't realize that they engage us. And once they do, that tends to change. So, hopefully once you have that breakdown in conversation and start maybe asking these questions, you may be able to, break down some barriers there, or at least get to a level of understanding. Now, if the individual is set on, you know, if they are set on those thoughts and views, then you may want to reconsider pursuing a serious relationship with them. You know, it may not be worth your time and energy to, because what you're going to find that you're doing is you're going to constantly try to change this person. And that's always one of the worst things you can do in any relationship. So if you find that asking the questions and establishing dialogue isn't working, then you may want to reassess. You may want to reconsider building a stronger relationship with that person.
Yeah, makes sense. Because at the end of the day, you do have to have an open line of, again, communication.
Absolutely.
So that makes perfect sense. Okay, and now the next question is again about my favorite topic, polyamory. So how does the legal system endorse polyamory? So is it illegal to be polyamorous? And obviously this changes depending on the country. So for example, in the UK, I can tell you that it's illegal to marry more than one person, but it's not illegal to be polyamorous per se. So like you can have more relationships, but not marry them. I'm not sure about how the US works.
Right. So in the United States, the laws vary from state to state. So there may, you know, in most now in Utah and Mormon country, it is legal for now. I'm not sure. Maybe some of the more religious folks can tell me, and especially ex-Mormon. It is in the Mormon culture for a man to have, it's legal for them to have more than one wife, or is permissible. Now, legally, in most states in the US, you cannot marry more than one person. And in some states, if you have multiple partners and you're married, that could be considered legal adultery. Now, are those necessarily in force? Not necessarily, but, you know, those could be grounds for, like, if you're getting a divorce, you know, it could get divorced on the grounds of adultery and stuff like that. There could be consequences for that. Mm-hmm. However, and I will say that even though I am married, I am actually now sort of soured on the legal institution of marriage. I totally am. Because if you look historically, at the concept of marriage, much of it was transactional. You know, it was very, in many societies, it was based on, you know, status, and it was more business. But, you know, this idea of romantic love and being, you know, with one partner, you know, for the rest of your life, your natural life, you know, is relatively recent, and it is definitely more of a religious concept.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, the expectations of marriage can be quite confining. Mm-hmm. And I do recommend that people proceed with caution if they are to get married, especially in the United States, because divorces can be costly. And plus, also, a lot of people idolize weddings. You know, weddings can be pretty, they're beautiful, you have all your people there, and it's a nice celebration. And so people need to be honest, you know, about what they're really looking for. Are they just looking to have a big wedding day, or are you looking to really cultivate a marriage and a relationship? So before you decide to do that, again, it's important to, yes, know the laws of your state. And if you are going to, if you know that you're going to be in a either multiple or polyamorous relationship, it's important for, you know, for you to understand what those guidelines, and you set those. It's good to set those as you build those relationships and as you build up that community, you know, of your own. And it's good to abide by definitely those, you know, those golden rules there. So, but legally in the United States, you're only permitted to marry one person at a time. So, yeah, there are, you know, there are often variables that go along with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's not forget that we don't need marriage to validate the relationships.
Exactly. Right. Right. There's a lot more domestic partnerships now. You know, there's a lot more, especially for same gender couples or, you know, or and such. So yeah, marriage doesn't always validate a relationship.
I love that alternative. Like you don't have to get married. Maybe there's a tax benefit, but if you don't want to get married, you don't have to. That's kind of neat to see that these days.
Yeah.
We got another question. There's been quite a bit of conversation about Zoom dating. I think that's different than speed dating, but it's more about going over a Zoom call. Do you know anything about that? And how would one connect with getting involved in Zoom dating?
I guess it depends. You know, there are a lot of meetup groups. Meetup is your friend. and so there may be, especially now that we're dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, connecting online is now becoming more common than ever. So, and also something I meant to say during the presentation, don't let the distance prevent you from developing relationships. Don't let distance stop you. And I know that there are many people who like to have relationships with people who are close, and you like to have that, you know, that intimate connection, but you can establish an intimate connection with people who may not necessarily be right next to you and or close by. So, I mean, if it's definitely a start. I am very much an advocate for looking at multiple possibilities for connecting and dating. And if Zoom happens to be one of them, because Zoom, you can go for as long as you want. You know, you can have conversations. And especially now that on our smartphones, you know, we have the ability to, you know, do FaceTime, you know, we have the ability to Skype, you know, we have the ability to do Google Meets and such. So there's other possibilities there. But I think, you know, if there is a service that offers Zoom connections, then it's certainly worth looking into. You know, if you're looking to, you know, if you're looking to date or establish connections with other people.
Yeah, and so kind of along the same lines. So Meetup would be a great place to meet some folks. Do you have any other places you meet some secular folks, maybe some secular groups in the area?
I'm very happy about this. Earlier this year, before everything got shut down, with the Atlanta affiliate for BN, we did like a hangout night. It was supposed to be karaoke. And the place that we went to, actually, they advertised karaoke, but it actually wasn't taking place. So a few of us just ended up going to a restaurant, and there were two people that met, and now they're a couple. So, and I've also had, you know, I'm also proud to say that we have seen a number of relationships develop over, you know, over the course of, you know, building this community and developing the organization. So what's been great about that is bringing people together, whether it is for something casual. Now, we certainly could try to, there have been a number of members who have suggested doing sort of like a speed dating night, or, you know, having a, we actually used to have a subgroup for people who, you know, a sub dating group, but unfortunately there were people who were sort of just like bringing their frustrations and venting about what it was like to date instead of establishing connections. But, and then they were also dealing with people who were just leaving religion, and, you know, they were just kind of running, you know, they were sort of like, I guess, freeballing, if you will. And so, you know, they weren't necessarily respecting boundaries and such. So, you know, that was another part of it. But I highly recommend for, you know, for organizations, if you, especially if you have a lot of social events, to do some sort of meet and greet, especially for singles.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, to, you know, to do something like that, you know, where singles can meet and, you know, and see where things go from there. And it's good to do that, you know, more than once. And maybe every couple of months or so, or, you know, or even for the single people in the group to facilitate. It's like, hey, you know, this may not be my thing, but, and this is a good way, like we said, you know, for people to volunteer and get involved. If this is important to you and you want to see more connections build, then get involved with your local organization and help us build it.
Yeah. There's another site, and again, I've been out of the dating pool for years, and I think there's another site, agnostic.com, where you can meet and connect with some other non-believers. Is that something that you might recommend too?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing the agnostic folks at one of the American Atheist conventions. Yeah. I think the one in Oklahoma City.
I think you're right.
And so I'm certain that there are atheists there. You know, maybe they have a section for people who are dating. And I think that if they have the ability to facilitate that, then that would be great. And I think it's also important for the users to use it wisely.
Yeah, I think I just recently filled out a profile maybe a month or two ago, just to kind of connect with other agnostics. And one of the questions was, are you looking to find a connection? Are you married and or not looking to find a connection, or just kind of wanting to hang out type of thing? If I remember right, that was one of the profile questions that were asked, just to set up an account.
Yeah. I think that is that those are things that are very important. And again, it, you know, people who are married, for those of us who are married and maybe looking for other connections, people just think it's solely, you know, about sex. And in some cases, there may be, it may be, but you know what? Again, we are not in the business of judging people for some of the things that they do. As long as, I mean, I always encourage people to be responsible in what they do. And especially because we don't know what situations are, you know, it's important to, you know, not just go in judging and condemning. But it isn't, you know, if, even if it's just for other friendships, that's a good thing.
We have another question from one of the audience. So this person says, I have been religious for 40 years and I am now looking to date. Why is it that when I meet religious people, I shut down and I can't proceed further with them because they keep trying to get me to believe? Does that mean I can't date a believer?
You may not be ready to date a believer right now, because if you've been a religious for 40 years, and you said 40, right? Was that correct?
Yeah, 40.
Yeah, if you've been religious for 40 years and you have some, so, you know, if you're trying to date and someone is religious, you know, that part of you will shut down. And that's understandable, because there's a, you know, that is a trigger that could be traumatic for people trying to bring you back in. So, you know, it's definitely a, that may be a hard experience if you have people who are just trying to pull you back in. Yeah. So, you know, I definitely recommend engaging, you know, more secular spaces for that purpose. It doesn't necessarily mean that just because you're in a secular space that you're going to find that one right away, because again, that takes work. You know, it's a navigation process. But it is completely understandable that if you are dating and you have believers who are trying to pull you back in, it is understandable that you will want to shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. You should prioritize your mental health always.
Yes, because that's definitely, you don't have to give into that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And the last question that we have for now is, how can we deal with different love languages at the beginning of a relationship? So I understand this as some people have the physical touch kind of love language, other people prefer gifts, other people prefer for someone to do the dishes for them. How can we communicate these different love languages and align them at the beginning of a relationship?
Yeah, so a good thing is to ask questions. You know, you may be able to ask and just talk with folks, you know, yeah. Listen to what they say they like. And it's okay to be a bit proactive, you know, if you'd like to, you know, because some people may not like that. You know, I personally have always thought, you know, the whole flowers thing was a bit too gushy for me. You know, it makes me feel weird. So, but, you know, I've always liked when, you know, folks may, you know, my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, may have, you know, done something nice, or I may have done something nice for him. But, you know, if there's something that if a partner tells you that, you know, they like it, And also, it's okay to ask right there in the moment, you know, may I? Is it okay to? They'll either say yes or no. The worst thing they can do is say no. And if they don't, that is fine, you know, and continue to ask. You know, don't assume anything. What did we say about assuming? You make an ass out of you and me. So do not assume anything. Do ask questions. Do listen. And you can take some, you know, you can be a bit spontaneous and a bit proactive, and don't do it for the expectation of getting something out of it, because that is what a lot of people do. You know, there are a lot of people who may do things for a partner because it is a means to an end for them. You know, there are some people who they do these things just because they may want sex or they may want something, and then that's it. If that is your ultimate goal, then you might need to stop. So, but that love language is definitely, love language isn't just about speaking. It is about listening. It is about, and it is about asking. It really is. And that, you know, asking can definitely be one of the most sexiest things you can do. And taking the time to say please and thank you, you know, treat your partner as a human being. You know, don't start taking them for granted. You know, always continue, you know, to treat, you know, to at least have that sense of, you know, that common courtesy and just treating them like adults. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not assume your partner can read your mind, because
right.
he or she
right.
or them can definitely not. So,
yeah. Now, if you've been together long enough, you kind of know what someone's triggers are, or you kind of know what may bother them, what they may like, and it's okay to continue to monitor that. It's okay to continue to monitor and respect it.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, thank you so much, Mandisa. Is there anything else you would like to add before we close the Q&A section?
No, before that, I mean, thank you very much again for tuning in. It looks like it was a very, very lively conversation. Please do continue to, you know, visit and support us at blacknonbelievers.org and recoveringfromreligion.org. Thank you to everyone who has supported our organizations, especially over these past few months. It has been very much appreciated. And I really would like to thank you all for, you know, just for being here and continuing to be a part of this community and continuing to be a better person for yourself and for others around you.
Yeah, be sure to go out there and we'll post the links in the chat again, but go out there and support Black Nonbelievers, and especially go out there and support Mandisa with her activism. It's well worth what you can give towards her to make her, to help her do continue this mission and the activism.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mandisa. It's really been amazing. Thank you.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.